Hello, welcome to the F1 show. Yes, we're here to discuss all the goings on at the German Grand Prix this weekend. We're from a point of high levels of knowledge. With the exception of Steve Naber, who's got some very interesting questions for later, though. I'm joined by a great panel. Top left, we've got Mr. Tony Blunt. How you doing, sir?
Hello, I'm brilliant, thanks. How about you?
Good week. Yeah, are you all right?
Yeah, I've had a nice week off work, so, you know, just getting ready to go back tomorrow.
Oh, you're lucky git.
Yeah.
And
I had to book it last year, but, you know.
What have you done with that week, Tone?
Fruitful? Virtually nothing. I've drank cider.
Have you drunk cider from 11?
In the morning?
As in the song?
Yeah.
In Nottinghamshire, mate, that's having an all-dayer.
Yeah.
In Nottinghamshire, it's about par for the course, isn't it, I believe?
Going downtown and having an all-dayer.
It's a good day, yeah.
I've been out in Nottingham, and there used to be a sandpit in the middle of the town hall.
And there is again now.
There's actually
a full beach set up in the market square.
Well, there you go.
For about 10 weeks.
If you're not doing anything during the Olympics, you can either go to Home Pier Point, which has got the canoeing, or you can go into the middle and sit on the sand in the square. Next to him, the man who's been to that square, Mr. Steve Naber.
Hello, sir. How are you?
I'm good, mate. You?
Yeah, good. Good. I believe you had some hay fever over the weekend.
Oh, blimey. Did I ever? I was working in a cutting, railway cutting.
Oh, okay.
I learnt a lot, I have to say. But I was in a railway cutting. There was loads and loads of flowers and pollen, and they gave me a welder's boiler suit to wear for the day because they hadn't got anything else.
Did it fit?
It fitted.
Good.
But that wasn't the issue. The issue was it would have stopped a bullet, but it didn't stop the sun's rays.
Oh, dear.
I was more than a little hot.
So they made you sweat and get hot?
Yeah, I reckon I lost 3 stone in body weight.
So is it like an ancient diver's kit, Ewan?
It was, actually. That's not a bad image.
I suppose that's a bit similar to being in a Formula One jacket, though, isn't it? For the many laps that the Formula One race has.
Well,
I think
yeah,
they're a bit more high tech.
They're probably doing a lot as well. They probably do lose a lot of body fluid, don't they, during the races. Mm. That other voice is that of Miss Sarah Gray. How are you doing, girl?
I'm very well, thank you.
Excellent. Did you watch the race?
I did indeed, and thoroughly enjoyed it. Between watching it was good that it was on extended highlights because we had the Olympic torch here on Sunday, so I was able to watch that while it was here and then follow straight on into watching the Grand Prix.
So watching the Grand Prix, did we all think it was a good Grand Prix?
Yeah,
it was.
Well, it followed off the back of a kind of bad one, but, you know, yeah. It was good. It was back up to the action level that we've come to expect this season.
I thought it was quite weird, actually, that we had two races in a row where we've had really wet qualies followed by really sunny race days.
Mm. Yeah, that's what you want, though. Qualies a bit.
Is it my time to own up?
Mixed it up.
You can own up, Steve. Go ahead, mate. What are you going to own up to?
I spent the weekend chasing the torch around London. And finally got to find it, which meant that I didn't manage to see the race.
No, that's all right. You let off, mate.
BBC, so I'm going to be the
whereas I just wait.
What happened person on this podcast.
Get out
there. So I just waited.
Sorry, Sarah.
I was just going to say, whereas I just waited for it to come to me.
Get iPlayer Automator, mate. That's what you need, and get the F1 highlights.
Yeah. Yeah, I do. I do need to do that.
Well, we'll let Steve into the fact that it was won by Alonso. Start to finish, he went through quali and got pole position, and he drove the whole thing from the front, never looked in doubt, had serious, serious speed over everyone else. 2 and 3 never caught up with him at all, and he went out winner. No controversy in it at all, he took it up. And Ferrari are now sitting second in the Drivers' Championship on 177 points.
Yes.
And all I can think is, just think what they could do if they ran two cars.
I was just thinking that, guess who's letting the side down now then?
Well, it's not Massa. Who's the other one then? Who's letting the side down?
Well, if Massa was up there, then they would be atop the Constructors' Championship, wouldn't they?
We got to the British Grand Prix and we all looked at Massa and said, well, the little bugger's trying. Give him some kudos there, eh? And this week, qualified 13th, finished 13th. Not very good.
I'm on the edge of excitement here.
Why?
Well, the photo that you just put up that showed Alonso winning was a great photo, because on that photo, Alonso was really happy. And I can see, or eagle-eyed, no, the other photo, the one with him standing on the car.
Okay, thank you.
I can see old eagle-eyed me. There's somebody quite sad in the corner there. Yeah. Down below, I can see him hitting his head.
Yes.
Oh, would that be your favourite driver,
bitter disappointment.
Then?
Yeah.
Well, no, you've got you're in for a real treat, mate, because not only did Vettel finish second...
Don't tell him.
But on lap 66...
Oh, spoiler alert.
What do you mean? I haven't seen it. Declared spoiler.
He wants to know this.
On lap 66, Button was second, Vettel was third, and Vettel decided to try and pass Button on the hairpin... And Button went a bit wider, so Vettel went onto the paint, and Vettel accelerated off the paint and overtook him. And that's an overtake off the track, and he got a 20-second penalty, which was a drive-through pit stop fault thing. And
what a shame.
He went down to ninth, I think, isn't it?
Fifth. Yeah.
Okay.
Go on his time.
So the final orders of all of it, I've done, but I can't find them now. Bugger. Where have they gone then?
What do you mean? You're in the final order of the...
The final order of the race.
Alonso, Button, Raikkonen, Kobayashi, Vettel...
Yeah.
Perez, Schumacher, Webber, Hülkenberg, Rosberg.
I know, but I've got a graphic. That's the point, you see.
Right, okay.
Here we go. Here's my graphic.
I'm going to stop this podcast and go watch this. This sounds really exciting.
Oh, you should get it on iPlayer, mate, and watch it. But of all of the races that we've had this year, there's a few snooze fests and there's a few that have been relatively good. And I wouldn't have said that I described any of them of edgiest seat other than metaphorically. But there was one moment, and one moment only during this race, I sat and I edged forwards and forwards and forwards. And when the moment occurred, I was on the edge of my seat and I was pumping my fist. What was it?
Was it? Did they have another scene with the girls in the pool overlooking the race again?
Yes, that was it. No, I was watching a replay of Valencia. I wasn't watching.
Yeah, how many times have you watched that now, Ewan?
I don't know.
I've watched it 27 times.
I paused it so often. I think I've damaged it. though my moment was the pit stop.
Oh, you nicked it.
That was definitely. Well, no, that can be yours too. No, that can be yours too, because that was edge of the seat.
You talking about the McLaren one?
Yeah, McLaren pit, and Button goes in and gets a tyre change, and immediately Alonso on the following lap, Alonso and Vettel decide to copy. So they go in, and you're sitting thinking, well, there could be a bit of an argy-bargy here between Ferrari and Red Bull. If Red Bull do a significantly faster pit stop, it's going to be interesting because Red Bull are behind in the pit lane as to who's going to come out first. And while you were watching for that and looking for the jockeying position of that, Alonso comes out well ahead of Vettel, I'd forgotten that Button had just pitted. So he would be round at exactly the right moment to try and figure out whether he was going to get past or not. And as he came out, as Vettel hit the pit lane, you just saw Button come around that first turn. And I was there, it's like, go on.
Yeah.
That's the only time this season I've been actually on the edge of my seat. So well done to Hockenheim, because it's a boring pig turd of a course, I think. But well done. A lot of passing this time as well. DRS was well placed, I thought. And it was a good race.
Yeah, they got the DRS right this time. I thought it was going to be too long, the zone where they had it, but it was just got that just right this time out.
Now then, talking of DRS, there was an awful lot went on in practice beforehand. And in free practice one, Kimi went out with a double DRS solution to his rear wing. I've got a picture of it here that I'm just showing. And this was a central strut that came down and allowed, presumably, some extra downforce to be applied when DRS was engaged. There's a picture of it, and I don't know an awful lot about it, but they were shielding it, weren't they? They were trying to stop people from seeing it up close. Any word on that? Any thoughts on it? Have you read any of the technical stuff on it, whether it's...
I mean, we've seen similar systems already this year. It just seemed, you know, another slight variant on that. There didn't seem to be anything spectacularly new about the idea, really.
I'm not entirely sure, though, how he gains any extra benefit from it.
Is it something that's static, or does it deploy dynamically in the same way that the actual DRS deploys?
The main stalk there is rigid from what I can work out, so I'm not entirely sure how that articulates. But they said that there was something to do with the aerodynamics through the exhaust and through the body as well that changes in the back end. But that's the effect of it. They're saying that it effectively gives a DRS plus effect, but they didn't run it during the race.
It's a DRS plus.
Yeah, I mean, they called it his double DRS system on the technical documents, but they didn't run it at all during the race. But it doesn't give him double DRS, like as in there's no two zones or anything. But they're saying that when he engages DRS, it supposedly they think may give him extra downforce.
But I guess what they're meaning by that is that when the flap is open or DRS employed, that central channel device, it's a small section in the center of the wing, isn't it? That is therefore increasing the amount of flow through the open area by increasing the velocity of the air or something like that.
But it's
got well, it would, yeah.
With the gap in the middle between it, I can't imagine if that was solid. Then I could imagine that it would, because it would push the air either side of it. But as it's got a gap, you know, it's just a frame. I can't see what actually the difference it's going to make.
Well, I think it diffuses the air as well around the outlet behind, because there's an airflow outlet behind that comes down from the overhead air intake for cooling. So I think it probably has something to do with that as well. That probably changes the airflow around the back of that exhaust as it's coming out.
So did he race with that as well, or was that just in practice?
No, it was just practice. He didn't race with it at all.
Or quality, yeah.
Yeah, no, didn't qualify with it either.
Maybe they're not sure about it yet. They're just testing it.
Yeah, there was a ton of sensors. There was loads and loads of sensors on the race cars this time as well. I was fortunate enough to be at home during P1. And a lot of the cars went out with a lot of airflow sensors over them. I mean, big, big blocks of airflow sensors, you know, 20 or 30 sensors on a mount. But, I mean, when I was at Marussia, they were saying that they might send the car out with 70 or 80 sensors on it, maybe even more, but they'll only race with a few on it, 25, 30.
Yeah, because he's got the weight, how that will affect the weight, won't you?
Jenson Button made changes to the back of his car in sheer frustration at his crap performance for the year. He sat on the airflow at the back of the monopod, and they've crushed it a little bit. So they've crushed it on the other side so it looks similar. And it seemed to work because he went reasonably quickly this weekend, it would seem. They've also put some fins on the front, haven't they, as well? It's all aerodynamic changes for them. Anyone read anything on that? Or the back looks
weird.
I
knew they'd got a load of upgrades because I'd heard them say about it, but I hadn't seen specifically what they were.
Well, that was a big thing because Kimi's car, everyone was shielding round it, but... Widmarsh was calling people over and going, "Now, come and have a look, come and have a look." And they were explaining what they'd done and why they'd done it and what they were hoping to achieve with it. It was really cool.
That's got to be a first, doesn't it?
Yeah, it was like have a cheese and wine party and demonstrate your aerodynamic changes.
Oh. Sounds good.
Ferrari did some as well. They got some go-go's from WH Smiths and they pinned them on the outside of the aerofoil on the front spoiler. So there you go. Those little white things there, like little shrimps. And Apparently, Williams made some changes as well. That's their front wing now. That, if that came in an IKEA flat pack, you'd never build it.
There's so many bits on that, isn't there?
Yeah. That's just.
I think Eddie Jordan's comments about the current wing is just so ugly because it's so perfect in terms of engineering design, but it's just not graceful. I think the diagram that you've got there on the screen is just a wing that is. It looks like the alien predator skin, and that it's got so many scales on top of each other.
It's probably got layers that fold out.
I was actually thinking it looks like an X-ray of a hand with all the finger bones.
Yes, I get that. Or Klingon Batleth.
Yeah.
That's a really sad joke, actually, isn't it? That was Maldonado's front wing anyway.
How long did it stay like that for?
Well, no, it was Bruno Senna's actually that was the problem. Bruno Senna's looked like that until about the second corner.
Yes.
And then it was kind of different. It looked like a broken hand.
Yeah, it wasn't his fault, though. It was Grosjean, wasn't it?
But those were the technical changes. And then there was the big story.
The big story?
Oh, the huge story.
It was a big story, was it?
You've not heard this either.
Oh, mate, you've been on Mars.
I've been in the Olympic world.
You only held the thing for 5 minutes. Adrian Newey and what's his face? Christian
Horner.
They had a slap-up, did they?
No. They were called in by the FIA stewards who alleged that they discovered that Red Bull were using an illegal engine mapping system. So this is basically, it's the menu for the engine. It's the way that it tunes up and down during the race, and it's the programs that it runs in certain situations. And they were suggesting that the program that they were running was illegal and that it was creating a false downforce, which, what was it called? Was it like traction control, effectively?
It was to do with the maximum amount of torque during a certain phase of the engine revving.
It was the mid-range.
Yeah, mid-rev, yeah. They didn't have the maximum torque that should have been available at that point.
Basically, what was happening was when the Red Bull was going into the corners, the engine was cutting out and it was deliberately misfiring to allow extra downforce through the turn.
Is that why it was making that funny noise?
Yes. How do you know about the funny noise if you didn't watch it?
I know about
the inner races.
You know about funny noises, I'll guarantee that, but
yeah.
Are you quickly?
So what's the result
stories?
Of that then?
Well, actually, we just sat down to start doing the show, and Tony and I were talking about it, and he was saying, well, you know, there's going to be further investigations. But if you look on Sky's website, Red Bull's controversial Hockenheim engine map was fully legal, a fact that's now accepted by the FIA's technical delegate, Charlie Whiting. It broke the intent of the regulations, but was not the wording of the regulations. And that's a completely legitimate avenue for competition in F1, and it always has been. Yeah. What's the view on that then? So it broke the spirit of the regulations, but didn't break the wording.
Isn't that the second time that Red Bull have done that this year?
Yes.
No, yeah, the hole in the floor as well, wasn't it?
No, don't forget that there was at Monaco, there was the hole in the floor, wasn't there?
The hole in the floor.
Oh, yeah. The hole in the back of the floor.
So go on and discuss. It broke the spirit of the regulations, but not the wording of the regulations. Tone, keep it clean, by the way.
Well, it's like that. You know, like I said, you know, I'm sure the wording was in there about the, you know, about the aerodynamic effect it could have. Well, that was it. The wording wasn't there for that. It was just for what the engine actually does, as far as I understood it. But you know, you get things like that. We've had this for years. You know, things where there's a little loophole, and they suddenly find it. It's always amazing when someone, you know, teams have accused each other for years, haven't they? Of they're cheating because of this. It's like, well, no, they're just working a loophole that will get closed.
Yeah, and they have closed it. The FIA have changed the technical information relating to engine mapping now, and it stops them from doing it. So Red Bull will be back to 10th and 11th next week.
And Steve will be very happy.
Sarah, any thoughts on this whole episode?
Well, I mean, I thought it was a bit of a storm in teacup. When I saw Martin Brundle's tweet about it, first of all, I thought, oh, this could be really interesting because if it was really bad, it could obviously exclude Red Bull from even starting the race. And that would obviously be quite serious. But it obviously all seemed to blow over. And they mentioned before quali on Saturday that it was a storm in a teacup before we'd even got to the actual quali. So, which was, I don't know, a bit like Steve. There's a bit of me that still kind of likes to see Red Bull getting slapped across the wrist sometimes.
I mean, I did see somebody tweet out earlier. It was something to the effect of, oh, the rules have been changed. Will Red Bull now be excluded from the championship? Like, well, no,
because they're going to be changed the rules.
Like, whoever thinks that was going to happen was going to.
Here's what rule 5.5.3 says. The maximum accelerator pedal travel position must correspond to an engine torque demand equal to or greater than the maximum engine torque at the measured engine speed. In other words, it's not permitted to have an engine that gives less torque than that is being asked for by the driver through the throttle pedal. So basically what they're saying is you can't have... you can't have him push the pedal and the car take over and say, no, you're not having that, which is what was happening.
I can imagine that took a little bit of convincing, that system, for the Formula One drivers to actually take. You're telling me that I need a computer to help me drive my car. My throttle, my right foot, they're quite big ego guys. And I would be surprised if they've actually kind of accepted that without a little bit of a shouting match.
I think it's not really about that. I think with the teams, it will be, especially since the Shuey days with Ferrari, when he helped develop that team from being really nowhere at the time when he first joined them. It's been about whatever it does to take the whole team to get to the finish line first. And I don't think it's there might be an issue with the drivers with egos, but after all, they want to win more than anything else. So if their team can create a car that will do that, and they can convince them that, hey, it shouldn't necessarily be about what you could do with your right foot, then I'm sure that they'll accept that.
It's about every little advantage, isn't it? If you take advantage, you might as well be in a set of GP2 cars.
What I found kind of interesting was that this new system's supposed to help the drivers. Vettel, it didn't really affect him particularly badly. He flew reasonably well. He lost his rag a bit, I think, and lost control mentally through one section, but calmed himself down and got back to it. But Webber was so uneasy with the car. I mean, Webber never threw the car into any corners with any kind of conviction. And I don't know if it was just the fact it was, it was oversteering or understeering more than he expected, that, the front wheels weren't turning into the corner, or whether it was just the fact that because the car was taking over, it wasn't optimised for the way that he wanted to drive it. This change had been made for Vettel, not made for Webber.
Possibly. Did you see Vettel lose his, sort of give a hand signal to Webber during quali for holding him up?
Yeah, that was whoever scheduled that was their fault. I mean, they basically sent the two of them out on the track back to back for a qualifying lap.
Yeah, but I thought, come on, Seb, calm down.
Well, it wasn't the first hand waved in the weekend, was it?
He just seemed to do it an awful lot these days. I don't know.
Even just this weekend, it seemed to be cars getting in each other's way and hand waving going on.
It's like, whenever I'm not winning, I'm going to throw my toys out the pram.
Oh, don't talk about Webber Vettel like that. He's a lovely man.
I got the definite impression this weekend from looking at practice, qualifying, and the race that Mr. Vettel's got a healthy dose of tosser in him.
How dare you say that?
You've got two more converts, Steve.
dare you say that? I love Mr. Vettel.
There's also been the scarlet letter, hasn't there, around the fact that he's not a racer, he's a dragster. So he goes out and sets times, but when it comes down to actually having to, take people on, he's no good as a racer. And to a certain degree, that was kind of fulfilled this weekend, because when he got past... his back end was all over the place. He was off the circuit.
He was hanging it out.
He was loose and fast and not making very much progress. And then when it came to the overtake, Jensen, I thought, had a really good race technically, because if you look at the passes that he did, the Hülkenberg pass sort of I don't know, about lap 12, something like that. He fainted left, and Hülkenberg went at lap 8. Hülkenberg went, and then of course once Hülkenberg had taken that line, he knew he couldn't come back, and it was clearly a, you know, I'm going over here. Oh no, I'm not. See you later. And he disappeared. And he drove superbly this weekend. Forget about the speed, and that must have been part of it to help him. But I thought Button actually, he just drove better.
He did.
So what was, if that was lap 8, what was Jensen's next pass on, Sarah? What lap?
Who did he pass after that?
Yes. Come on, Sarah, you were paying attention.
He did Shuey as well about 5 laps later.
Yeah.
Go on, Sarah, check the notes.
Yeah.
On
the outside of DRS.
Yes, it was on lap 11 he took Shuey, for third.
Were you paying on anyone else in terms of watching them and when they overtook anyone else?
Yeah,
or was it just Mr. Jensen that you were looking at?
Oh, shut up.
Come on, let's be clear.
Everybody but Sebastian. I have got a soft spot for Jensen.
I'm going to bed.
Are we out in Sarah's Jensen fetish?
Everyone knows I'm a big Jensen fan, so
I can see that right now.
We know, Sarah. Was there any other passes that stood out? You've got a list there, Sarah. Go on, give us a rundown.
Yeah, my magic
top 10 passes.
As soon as we've done magic moments, I'll do mine. I think it was the most exciting overtake of the whole race, and that was Raikkonen taking Di Resta on lap 5.
Seconded.
It was to and fro. It went on for quite a few corners, and eventually Raikkonen got past him, but it was brilliant toe-to-toe racing, and it showed the maturity of Di Resta, who, let's face it, has only been around for 2 years. And, you know, he could have easily, you know, messed that up, but they actually showed, both of them showed great maturity, and it was great racing to watch. And when you said... Ewan, when you said you were sitting on the edge of your seat, I thought this is what you were going to talk about.
Oh, no, right.
No, for once for him, the action took place in the pits. Sort of.
Well, there was that. My other magic moment was the McLaren pit stop, which was 2.4.
The record-breaking one, officially.
2.4 seconds. It was amazing.
On lap 41. Was that
for Button?
On lap 41.
What the heck happened to Hamilton on this, then?
He got punctured it very early on.
But what was the engine? Why was the retirement? Was it gearbox or?
It was. He lost the rear end suspension. It never really recovered from him limping back to the pits after the puncture. And I was amazed that he went back out again. And obviously, the one thing about that slightly annoyed me about the BBC coverage at the weekend is that all of a sudden he's back in the race, and they'd obviously cut out the fact that he'd gone into the pits and what they'd actually done to the car.
They did nothing.
Yeah, he was on the radio. He had the new tires, but then he was going back out and he was complaining that the car wasn't stable.
Yeah,
and then it wasn't too long after he was putting in the laps where he was able to sort of try and lap himself again.
Well, you got it. It's not going to be a magic moment, but it's certainly going to be a quirky moment. He's driving round and Hamilton gets lapped by Alonso. He gets blue flagged. Alonso goes through. So that's a bit of ignominy.
Yeah.
A few seconds later, Vettel catches up. He gets lapped because he's blue flagged. Now, Button is behind Vettel and he's closing and he's 1.8 seconds behind. So he's got a little bit of a way to go. He's outside DRS. And I think actually that Button owes some credit to Hamilton for what he did next.
Yeah.
Hamilton suddenly goes through sector 2. 0.4 of a second faster than everyone else, and he's closed the gap back up on Vettel, and he's driving faster than Vettel and Alonso. So then he gets DRS on turn 4, and he overtakes Vettel and drives away.
And this was another handshaking moment, wasn't it?
Exactly. Vettel's gesturing like he can't do that. I'm a race leader. But by the time he's finished shaking his hand, Hamilton's already half a second away from him, and he's after Alonso. And there was a bit where Brundle's saying they can't blue flag him. That's not right. No, I mean, technically speaking,
they are.
Well, the laws don't stop you from unlapping yourself.
Mm. No,
once he gone past it, they should have made him. They should have blue flagged him.
Going into deep depression.
I think it was great. I mean, it happened on lap 35. They did actually say on the BBC commentary that it could actually be important because obviously at the end of the race, if you've been lapped, you finish on the same lap that the in terms of on the circuit that the winner finishes on. And obviously, if you're not lapped, then you've got another lap, almost a complete lap. If you're just in front of the winning driver, you've obviously got another lap to then actually gain more places. And they were saying, you know, actually that could make a difference. In the end, it didn't matter because obviously he retired. Mm. But it could have made a difference. So it was, you know, I could see what we were getting at. Plus, I think he was trying to make a point as well.
Yeah, because he wasn't getting the blue flag because at that point he was on the pace of, you know, it's like normally when they're lapping a car, it's because they're way off the pace, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And but the, when they get the blue flag, significantly slower.
Well, I think he burned his tyres, and I think he also then managed to do a fantastic job of just hindering and pissing Vettel off significantly enough
that
Vettel started to drive like a lunatic.
Yeah, because he never got to Alonso and unlapped himself from Alonso, did he? No. Just Vettel.
No.
Well, here's my question as well. There's a couple of things that I've thought of this week. I have thought, honest. The gearbox shuffle penalties. You swap it out before it's done five races, you get a five grid penalty. How many of the teams are thinking, stuff it, we'll take the five grid penalty? Because actually, by thrashing the gearbox, we gain more places anyway, and with thrashing the next gearbox, we can make up the time. And I'm just sitting thinking, what's the force that goes through a gearbox? And the force that goes through the gearbox is delivered from an engine, and an engine that's running a mapping system, which is questionable. And all the teams that are losing gearboxes, are they losing it because the engines are delivering too much than the gearbox can manage? And if you look at Ferrari, Ferrari haven't had an unscheduled gearbox change, have they?
No, I don't think.
But certainly Alonso hasn't.
No.
The thing with that, though, is don't they also have, like engines, a certain number of gearboxes as well as the certain time they have to last?
Well, they're supposed to last five races, but I don't know what would happen if you went, because you can't say that the next one suddenly got to last eight to make it to the end of the season, because that would be ridiculous. I think they're supposed to have a certain number, but if you get to the end of the race, or say you hit race 15 of 20, and you've run out of gearboxes, are they going to stop you racing? Is that it?
I assume that if they have an unscheduled gearbox change, that counts as an extra gearbox.
Yeah. But it's like with the engines, I think, I don't know whether the rules in force this year, but when they did have that, you know, when they brought the set number of engines in, you could have an extra engine, but there would be other penalties for that, you know, to make up for it.
Because the thing is with the engines, they actually work out which races they want a new engine for. And they will then they might then later on reuse an engine that they've already used for a previous race, but wasn't necessarily the previous race. So it might be in a race from, say, three races ago because the circuit better suits it. Yeah. Or they'll use that for the early stages and then actually have a new engine just for the race.
Yeah.
And they carry them through to the next.
Well, drivers' home races as well, they like to have new equipment for that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So, Steve? Sorry, mate, you got something to say there?
No, I was just to say, I don't know, really. I've forgotten. Sorry.
Should we do your three questions?
Oh, go on, then.
Steve's three questions. Here we go. Why don't you ask the questions, then? A, what line? We've done that one. You ask your questions, mate. Go on.
What line?
So, if we're in the Olympic week, I thought I'd ask some Olympic framed questions.
Good lad. I like the first
one. So, number one. If it was the F1, who would light the big flame if it was an F1 racer?
Jackie Stewart.
Really?
Oh, that's a good call.
Oh, who would light it? Yeah.
That is a peach of a call.
Not
maybe
the Mansell
you
guy. Are you saying Jackie Stewart because you're worried about Mansell's moustache?
No, just because listen to me, guys.
Jackie Stewart's won
the championship more times than any other Brit. Secondly, he's done more to create a safety environment for the drivers, the modern drivers, than anybody else. And he's an ambassador for sport. And I just think if you want to pick somebody from F1, I know he's a Brit, but even if it had been somebody, you know, from another country, he is ideal. He's a perfect, you know, he's a perfect choice for that for me.
Oh, I got to second that. But go on then, Steve.
I'd choose the Benetton team for the mid-90s. Those guys who caught a light.
Oh, all the fireballs.
Yeah, the fireball instant.
Well, you got, if you're going to do the bad fire jokes, mate, you got Niki Lauda to start with.
Massa. he drags it down the pit lane with him.
Yeah, no, but I'd go for Mansell, actually.
Who do we think, because they've decided who's going to do the Olympic torch, haven't they? But it's not been announced. Who do we think it is?
It's obviously Steve Redgrave. Anyone else, it would be definitely not right to be Steve. It's got to be Steve.
I think it's going to be the guy at the yellow jacket.
What, Bradley Wiggins?
Yep.
He should be carrying the flag, not Chris Hoy.
Yeah, the flag carries the team choice.
The relay, but not the lighting.
The flag carries the team choice, so whoever in Team GB gets the most votes gets to do it. It's not a bureaucratic decision.
Yeah, but I bet that vote was taken before Bradley won the Tour de France.
Might have been, but it's not. It doesn't change anything. He still can't be. Tanny Gray Thompson's probably going to do the Paralympic lighting, I would have thought.
Yeah, I don't know whether
she can do the...
What do they do, Paralympic lighting?
Yeah, doesn't the flame
just keep on going between...
No, I thought it went out and they did that.
I'm sure they'll have a ceremony for that.
So where does it go? It can't go out.
No, it doesn't go out. It goes back in the Davy lamp.
Oh, okay.
Redgrave's a good shout. I think Redgrave's a good shout, definitely.
The Thompson.
He epitomises the Olympic spirit.
What about Princess Anne?
Yeah, I think there's something royal going on.
I mean, there's no question she's going to be free that night because she's got bugger else to do.
She's got drinking to do.
She out with Tyndall then. Anyway, go on. Question two then, neighbour.
Oh, I can't remember. What was it?
What would an Olympic event look like? Well, there's 157 of them, isn't there, or something?
No, if there was an F1 Olympic event.
Oh, that reminds me. Have you heard the hot news? Slight sidestep here.
There's going to be an Olympic F1 event.
No. There is talk now of there being a new Formula One Grand Prix, the European Grand Prix, being held at the Olympic Stadium after the event.
Yes, there is.
In the park and going through the middle of the stadium.
Absolutely.
This year.
I'll tell you something, it's more credible than the other London Streets Grand Prix rumours that I keep hearing.
Yes.
Which are around sort of Buckingham Palace.
The road network's good around there now for that kind of stuff, so it would lay out really well. It gets my vote.
What's the circuit then?
Around the Olympic Park, yeah.
Yeah, the bid's been put into the sort of post-Olympic management team for the site. Yeah, one of them was put in, I don't know whether it was by a promoter or by Bernie or whoever, but it's been put in, they've mapped out a route. It's not been, I don't think I've seen it published yet, but they have a route planned and where the facilities would go.
Well, the F1 drivers were all out in Moscow, weren't they? Because old Lewis has been given the stuff by Nicole, apparently, for partying with 10 girls this week. They all had a little bit of an event.
We know that there's a Russian Grand Prix in the pipeline as
2014, well. 2014 Stock. Yeah. Apparently, it's good skiing there as well because I saw a poster today.
Oh, right, okay.
So we'll have a new compounded tyre with sort of studs on it as well. Is that where this is going?
Studded tyre racing. Now that would be on ice. We ought to do an ice Grand Prix in the winter.
Oh, well, they have
run demos on ice.
So there's
Imagine the fun they would have doing donuts on the ice.
There's the answer.
Would it?
There's, hang on, Steve. There's the answer to your question, mate. You don't need an event in the Olympics for F1. You need an event in the Winter Olympics for F1, mate. And it's got to be figure of eight with studded tyres. And they've got to make them out of Pirelli so the studs fall out. And they have to come in for a pit stop on them. And Kobayashi would crush no end of mechanics then. Anyway, go on. Sorry, Steve.
Where do you hang out on a Wednesday then?
Wednesday, here. Wednesday night.
On a Wednesday, you said you saw a poster today for
what is this week?
Russian dancing or something?
No, snowboarding.
Where do you hang out? This is a poster for Russian snowboarding.
Right, hang on. I need to Google where Russian GP, and it's a place that begins with an S, Stoltz or something like that, or...
It's a pretty big country,
It might be an old gulag complex. But it's, I can't remember what it's called, the Russian Grand Prix, Sochi, there we go, S-O-C-H-I. And I saw a bill poster for skiing at Sochi with a very attractive blonde girl on it.
Where?
Sochi.
Where did you see the poster, though?
Sochi. I saw it at Heathrow this week. It wasn't today, it was yesterday.
Ah.
But there you go, it's near St. Petersburg. And if you've played around St. Petersburg what was the Xbox game for driving?
Project Gotham.
Brilliant. Wonderful place to drive around. Lovely.
Does that have anything to do with Batman, by any chance?
No. No. Nothing at all.
Unfortunately.
PR4
the third
was
question.
And go on, do you have to?
What?
Go on, and the third question would be...
Would F1 produce a better mascot than the proper Olympics have?
My 3-year-old could choose a better mascot than the Olympics have currently got, mate.
Well, we'd certainly, after seeing the trophies, we'd certainly get something different, wouldn't we?
No one's seen the medals yet, have they? They're going to look crap.
I've seen the medals.
Oh, have you?
Yeah, they're all right.
Oh, okay.
The trophies that F1 some racers have, you know, sometimes it's like a dish, but sometimes it's like a little sculpture thing, isn't it?
And sometimes it's like a flame.
Yes.
Yes, it's a good job they don't put a thing around them, a neck brace around them, though, and try and hang them from their neck. Though that'll be a bit embarrassing.
Are we talking about the F1 things?
Yeah, the F1 thing. If it was like the Olympics and they put a little neck brace around them, it wouldn't really work.
Should we get back to F1? Sorry to interrupt.
I was going
to
make a comment on the trophy, actually.
Go on.
They're all slowly converging into, apart from the British Grand Prix, where they have a trophy that's very similar to the men's singles trophy at Wimbledon. They all seem to be becoming the same sort of trophy, and that might have something to do with Santander, I think. Slowly sponsoring more and more of the Grand Prix.
Well, they're sponsoring the podium now, aren't they, as well?
Mm.
They've got this new podium where they have the screens for the flags and they have a new process where they interview the drivers on the podium, which I'm really liking, I have to say.
Good. Santander, if you want to sponsor us, come in. We'll take your money. Have you been laundering? Because if you have, then I won't have you. But if you haven't, then fine, we'll take you as a sponsor. The final positions then. There's one real standout here, or two really. Sauber. Kobayashi finishes fourth.
I know. And it's going to be my driver of the day.
And doesn't hit a mechanic. And Perez, six. Perez was solid. Perez did nothing sparkly. He never really appeared on that much footage that was worth seeing, apart from him just doing the hairpin occasionally. But there he is in six. Sauber have really stepped up the game this season. And there was an interesting thing on Sky with an interview with De Resta. And Natalie Pinkham was sitting with him on a boat in the Monaco Harbour. And she said, you know, what's the big challenge for you? And he said, well, you know, we wanted to maintain six in the Constructors' Championship. But, you know, we're going to have to work hard for that because Sauber and Williams have obviously upped their game. Well, Williams are struggling a little bit there. They're out of it. Force India are doing pretty well. Great qualifying from Hülkenberg as fourth on the grid. But Sauber seem to be the real big challenge.
Yeah, the interesting thing looking at that order as well is that apart from Alonso winning, Sauber actually scored more points than anybody else.
Mm. Sauber doing really amazing. Well. I mean, what engine is Sauber carrying?
It's Ferrari, isn't it?
It's Ferrari engine, right.
Yeah.
So what's going on with Ferrari? Because I got to say, Alonso was untouchable. Yeah. You've got Vettel and Button behind him. Neither of them could put a finger on him. It was like he was just teasing him.
He's been like a man possessed the last two races. I think he's definitely got a grip on things at the moment, and now he's got a 34-point lead in the championship. I don't think it'd be anything to stop him.
Yeah, I think
it was only a 7-second win, though. Seven seconds is not a huge.
I know,
amount.
But the last two races.
Oh, that's.
And I know Stefano was playing that down when they BBC talked to him afterwards. But Alonso is just driving like a man possessed.
I got,
you know, he's fantastic to see. It really is. He's showing his class.
Alonso and this is my gut feeling on it. I'm not saying it's anything more than that. I've got no evidence to support what I'm about to say at all, but then I never have with anything. I got the impression that Alonso was driving as fast as he needed to stay out of the DRS zone. And when they closed in, he pulled away. They closed in, he pulled away. And he wasn't taxing his car. He wasn't flogging it with the big laps. He wasn't crunching the tyres with the hard cornering. I think he just drove a fast, smooth race, and he went as fast as he wanted to make sure that they stayed just behind him. He was toying with them. He was like a cat with a wounded bird.
I think he had more in that car, Ewan.
I think he had more in that car by far. I think he probably finished 30, 40 seconds ahead. Maybe I think more. But
I do think his mindset's changed as well. It's like, because I remember it, last time I really saw him like this, it was sort of late 2010 when he'd said at Silverstone he was way behind in the championship, but he said he was going to win the championship. And he did take it right down to the last race.
Didn't he, in the last race?
Yeah. I think in that sort of mindset again, where he was just pumping in the consistent results, and it just didn't quite pay off at the end because of one thing in the last race.
Yeah, he got caught behind another driver. I can't remember who it was. And he was winning the championship at that point. It was his championship to lose.
Yeah.
Because that was the one where Vettel was sort of went into that last race in the last position out of the title contender, didn't he?
Yeah, I mean, everything conspired in Vettel's favour. Yeah. He should never have won that title. I mean, obviously last year was a bit different, but, you know, 2010, he shouldn't have won it. It was you know, Webber was in second place, I think, behind Alonso that year at that point.
Yeah. And because I remember that race starting in near enough the championship order as well.
Yeah, I think Alonso was, I mean, you talk about drivers being totally in control. I think Alonso was totally in control, as to the point of not having to worry at all about where anyone else was.
Is he your favourite to win then?
At the moment, well, based on what I saw this weekend, I'd say there's no question of that, mate. I think he is out and out favourite to lift the championship. Yeah, this year.
I would tend to agree with you. The only thing I would say is the last two races where he's been awesome, Hamilton hasn't been able to get anywhere near him, and not because he's been right behind him, but because he's been further back in the grid. If we get a situation on Sunday in Hungary when you've got Alonso on pole and Hamilton in second, that could be interesting.
Yeah, and that's also Hungary. The Sunday is his 31st birthday, isn't it? And he'd be chasing what could potentially be his 31st win there.
Oh, the serendipity.
Yeah. It won't happen because the numbers match up.
And also remember that Jenson Button got his 200th Grand Prix last year in Hungary.
Yeah. Yeah, something like that, wasn't it?
Fair enough.
This one was Hamilton's 100th, wasn't it?
It was, yeah.
And look at the time he had. He drove well.
But I'll tell you what,
he was ready to give up as well, wasn't he?
Yeah.
A lot of it.
Well, he said, let's retire, didn't he? You know, after about 10, I can't remember what lap it was, but it was after about 10 laps somewhere in there. Yeah.
Tomorrow, I'm planning on wearing grey underpants. Schumacher's card's grey. So that must mean
you're going to win the title.
About as useful as bloody astrology, the Perrier. Good, what? Bennett. The serendipity of it.
Hungary.
Know. What's the forecast for Friday on Hungary?
What, weather or drivers?
Weather.
I saw a forecast that said storms for the Sunday.
I saw a forecast that had a piece of fort lightning coming down and killing someone.
Are we taking a vote on whose car we want it to hit?
Free practice could be free swimming. It might as well be at the Olympic Park in the Aquatic Centre from the forecast I saw. It's going to piss down.
Well, who had the curve system that was electrocuting the mechanics? Was it Williams?
That was Williams. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
that's what caused the fire, wasn't it?
Yeah, yes. That was it.
So we could see. Get all the extinguishers ready. Get them in the fireproofs. Everybody in the team, not just.
We all agree. There's nothing better than a wet Grand Prix.
It does shake things up a bit.
Oh yes.
I love it when it actually starts in the dry and then goes into the wet, because then you get the situation where it just starts to rain and it's like, who's going to jump first in terms of tyre changes? And it's all that mucking around and, you know, not quite sure. And then when it dries out again, it's like, who's going to be the first one that goes to slicks? And then as soon as somebody does it and they put in a absolute banker lap, that's how they all dive into the pits. It makes it so exciting.
I've just taken a quick screen capture here to show you. Just give me 1 second. But there is the forecast for Hungary. It's going to piss down on Friday. It's going to be sunny and 31 on Saturday. And Sunday, God himself will be sending lightning bolts down to strike the heart of every driver who is undeserving.
It'll be Kimmy's mate Thor, won't it?
It will be a biblical race.
So
it may as well just say Canada over the
yeah,
the
Canada from last year. Yes, absolutely.
Yes, go Jensen.
Absolutely.
So what we're going to end up with, looking at that forecast, is we're going to end up with boring grid, a usual grid, but it's going to really shake things up a bit on Sunday.
Because the last couple of races, we've had it the other way around. We've had wet qualifying, and they've had free choice because the race has been dry.
Oh, man, that means they've got to start on Super Softs.
No. Come on, guys.
No, the weather conditions will obviously...
I think my question earlier was, what race would you like to see? The answer is that the gods have answered. The Greek gods are in charge of F1.
Hungry.
You want to see it in wet with Super Softs?
I always wondered what happened in that situation, but... There was a race, I can't remember where it was, I think it might have been the end of last year, where exactly that happened, where it was dry on the Saturday, and it was absolutely bucketing down on the Sunday morning.
And they
actually let them...
No, if it's pissing down, they let them put wet
on. It's way too dangerous to go around in slicks in the pouring rain.
Yeah, no, it is.
What's happened the past couple of weekends. They've qualified in wet, on wet, but they've ended up with free choice on this compound, haven't they?
Mm.
Wussies.
There we go. Right, and just to finish...
Right, Mr. Neighbour, that sounds like a challenge. Let's get you in an F1 car with slicks on in the pouring rain. And let's see you handle it.
Yeah, let's get some video footage of Carly routing through the insurance documents.
If that's achieved by me just saying the word wusses, I'd be quite happy.
Yeah, yeah, I'd die that way, quite happily. Right, magic moment then. Tone, have you got one?
I think it was about lap 16 and you had... Schumacher and Raikkonen both passing a Force India.
The double pass on Hülkenberg, yes.
That was De Resta.
Yeah.
Was it De Resta that they took?
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was Hülkenberg at first, but it was De Resta. But they were both sort of squabbling over it. Kimi was way back.
I thought Kimi was a bit of a vulture in that pass, though. He was kind of, he knew what was coming up and he was hovering back and he was waiting for it.
Yeah, he was
waiting for something like that. Oh, hell yes.
Yeah. That was a good pass. That was really, really good. Steve, what have you got for us as a magic moment, mate?
Without doubt, Vettel.
With his hand on his head.
Well, yes.
I think that's... Actually, I mean, I knew that was Vettel. I know all he's doing there is scraping his air after pulling his fire vision. Really does look like... Oh, no, it does. Yes, spot on, mate. Well spotted.
Steve, do yourself a favour and see if you can find video of the little conversation Button and Vettel had. Out onto the podium. That was just classic.
I know. There was a bit that, in fact, the BBC coverage actually caught some of it when they were podium and stuff. And he's saying something like, you know, I think, you know, that's a bit off. And Vettel was going, no, it was fine, you know.
Yeah, I was giving you room while I went past you like that.
Yeah.
Off the track.
You've got to watch the race. Training.
There was a couple of real, real humdinging points in the race, mate. Definitely worth getting. Even though you know the result now, just go and watch it. Because some of the interchange was superb.
And Lauda on the podium asking the questions, after as well. That was like he just got straight in there with the hard questions. He wasn't pussyfooting, was he?
No. Sarah, your magic moment?
I think we've already done mine, but it was the Raikkonen overtake of De Resta on lap 5. And of course, the record-breaking pit stop.
That would be my second, but without a doubt, it was Button coming round with Vettel and Alonso pouring out the pits, and was Button going to make it past? Yes, he did. So
it was good to see.
And I got to say as well, Sky Sports have been showing some little animations of Jensen and Hamilton at the McLaren Centre, And they're really, really funny. Really good. The first one was a bit kind of tame. The last one was excellent. Really good. So keep those coming, F1. Thank you very much. Sky Sports, even.
Apparently, well, they are doing them every race.
Yeah, they're good. They're really good. You need to buy a little set of those. There's got to, they'll have to make them available on video, surely.
Yeah.
Or DVD.
Where can we get a hold of you, Tone?
At tone_720 on the Twitters.
Thank you. Mr. Neighbour?
I went to a street festival this week, so I now know to call it Twitter. And I'm on Twitter at Steve Neighbour.
Thank you, sir. And Sarah?
Oh, you're coming out this way, are you? You'd be talking like that. You can get a hold of me on the Twitters at Sarah Jane UK and on various other shows on the network.
I'm at Ewan Rankin on Twitter. And next week, we're going to be back with a Hungary Grand Prix. And now, are you guys? Can you watch it live or not on Sunday?
No, it's BBC extended highlights on Sunday.
Well, let's all come round my house and watch it, and we'll do a live one afterwards.
Sounds good.
Do it. You know you want to. But I'm watching it live, and I could quite happily do the show at 8 PM on Sunday night. But
I don't know what I'm doing with work yet, but I'll get back to you.
And if we don't do it at 8 PM on a Sunday night, then we're stuck, and I'm going to be away from home again on Monday. So we shall see.
8 PM Sunday then.
8 PM Sunday, I'm fine with, as long as everyone else can do it.
Just having a look to see what time it's on.
But it's not good audio. We'll talk to you next week. Thanks for watching.
Bye.